My name is Georgia Davenport. I'm running to represent Legislative District 7. I live in Nine Mile Falls. I'm a mother of an 8-year-old student in Nine Mile Falls.
How is it with an 8-year-old? Are the Nine Mile Falls kids in class or are they at home?
No, we're 100% home schooling, all online. And it's challenging, but I'm liking spending time with my 8-year-old, and they're doing a great job transitioning to online. They're using Google Classroom, and it's working out really well, actually, smoother than I thought.
Well, that's good to hear. How is campaigning been in a COVID world?
Well, it is difficult. You know, I don't want to go doorbelling, canvassing because of the danger of spreading COVID-19. So that's a challenge. But I do have phone banking set up, and I have volunteers who are amazing and writing postcards to voters all over the district, which is something we can still do. And pretty soon we'll be doing some text banking. So there are ways to talk to voters, communicate with voters despite the challenges, but nothing beats face-to-face interactions, town halls, and that sort of thing, and that's just impossible to do right now safely.
Well, and especially in a district as big as yours that you're running in. I mean, you're kind of at the southern end of that district, but you've got a whole hundreds of miles to cover if you wanted to go do doorbelling.
Yes, exactly. In fact, the one candidate forum that I have attended was in Republic, and that was 2.5 hours away from me. I'm always impressed at how big this one district is. I've lived in another district in Washington State, and that was the 33rd legislative district. You could drive across that district in about 20 minutes. So it's quite different here in Eastern Washington.
Well, so then let's get to the story of how you got into this race.
Yeah, so mainly it was Thursday of filing week, and nobody had filed against the incumbent, and I myself wanted a choice. I've been working in healthcare for about 4 years now. I was the campaign director for Whole Washington, which is a universal healthcare campaign here in Washington State. And even before the COVID-19 pandemic, we had hundreds of thousands of Washington residents without any healthcare coverage. And the current incumbent refused to co-sponsor that bill, the Whole Washington Health Trust bill. And so, like I said, I wanted a choice. I wanted somebody else to vote for. So somebody who would take bold action. COVID-19 demonstrates that healthcare should not be tied to employment. And now that millions of Americans have lost their jobs, I think that demonstrates it even more that we need universal healthcare. So when elected, my first order of business will be passing the Whole Washington Health Trust, so anybody can see the doctor when they're sick. Also, here in rural Eastern Washington, lots of hospitals and insurance companies are refusing. More and more people are relying on Life Flight, which is very, very expensive to get them to the nearest provider. In fact, I know somebody whose son needed Life Flight and it cost them $70,000. So one Life Flight can wipe out your savings. So that's one of the reasons I'm running. Another reason is the incumbent takes a ton of money from insurance companies, charter school PACs, Phillips 66, those sort of corporations. And I have pledged to not take money from corporations that continue to put profit before people. I want to represent the constituents, the voters in this district, not corporations.
So just because she takes money from corporations, what's the evidence that she's beholden to them?
Well, the bills like the Washington Health Trust, it would create a state-run, basically, funding mechanism for paying for health care that would provide health care to everyone. And I sent an email to her asking her to co-sponsor and never heard anything back. So I feel like a lot of the times elected officials will take phone calls from those corporations and lobbyists representing corporations if they donate to the campaigns, and they ignore their constituents.
So if you win this office, what are your expectations for what it's going to be like? I'm always interested, especially with new candidates, about what their expectations are of holding office. Have you thought much about that?
Yeah, actually, you know, I've gone to Olympia a few times to talk to my representatives about issues like healthcare and getting money out of politics. So I know kind of what it's like, except that this year might be, well, 2021 might be very different, depending on whether they do have in-person meetings. They might not actually meet in Olympia. I'm not sure how that's going to work. So it might be very different. But also, I've been a state committee member for the Washington State Democratic Party for quite some time, about 4 years, representing two different districts. So, and it's kind of how I feel about it is it kind of gives you a glimpse into how working in committees, what that's like. I was on the finance committee. So I feel like that's almost a little bit of candidate training and elected official training, is because you have committees that you're appointed to and you work within those committees.
So you are in a very red district. I don't think it's been like 30 years or so since they've last had a Democrat who was elected representative. How do you appeal then to the folks up in Republic, up in Colville, up in Newport, up in Ione, where, you know, the rural way of life is different than down here in Spokane?
Yeah, I mean, it is challenging, but I think running on the issues, for example, a lot of people in the rural areas are having really hard times getting internet access. Lots of parents during the beginning of COVID-19, I would see them in parking lots outside of the school where their kids would be accessing the Wi-Fi in the parking lots because they didn't have broadband at their homes. So I want to expand broadband and make it public, like a public utility, like water and electricity, because right now it's essential for children to have access to the internet so they can attend these classes. And also, you know, we have the most regressive tax system in the United States, and I feel like that's hurting a lot of people in this district. We have the lowest 20% of earners paying 17.8% of their earnings in local and state taxes, while the wealthiest 1% only pay 3%. And we have 13 billionaires in Washington state who pay no income tax to Washington state. If we had a wealth tax of just 2%, Jeff Bezos' contribution alone would cover our budget shortfall. I don't know if you've been hearing a lot of that about that right now, as we have a $9 billion budget shortfall over the next 2 years. And so they're talking about austerity measures, and that's really going to hurt people in districts like this. And so I plan a fight for a wealth tax so that the working class aren't punished for the economic woes of COVID-19.
Well, that's a pretty difficult lift. I know that progressives have been pushing for that for quite a long time. What makes you think that this is the right time for that, even with the arguments about wealth disparity?
I think that the fact that so many Americans are losing their job, so many small businesses are closing, I think that right now is definitely the time to tackle those big issues. I mean, it's been a problem for years now, but right now it's even worse than ever. So I think that having that discussion, and I've actually got contacted by an independent recently that, despite the fact that, you know, they were not really, those kind of issues were not appealing to them before, now they're really thinking about things like that. And we definitely need those billionaires paying into our state right now so that we don't have to lay off people in the public sector.
I want to go back to the rural internet idea. I know the State Department of Commerce is working on that. What are some of the ideas? How would you tackle that issue? How do you get companies to go that last mile? I mean, it's one thing to get a signal to a place like Colville, but then, you know, the last 2 miles up to somebody way up in the mountains so that they're small home households can have high-speed internet. How do you work on that?
I think we need a public internet service. That's how I would tackle it, is, and it should be, like I said, water and electricity, because it is a necessity at this point. So that's what I would like to see, is a public broadband bill passed that would make it so that we could have everyone have access to not just the internet, not just access to internet, but affordable internet, because that's another challenge with people in rural areas, is it's just too expensive, and we need to make sure that everybody, all the children who need to go online to go to their classes, have the ability to do that.
Well, that could be very expensive. Is that something that's worth the state adding to its portfolio of things to pay for?
Well, people would still pay for it. But it would be like I said, water and electricity. So while the infrastructure might be expensive, just like water and electricity, it is a necessity. So we should be providing it for people.
Well, let me turn to the coronavirus. We've been living with it for 7 or 8 months here in the state of Washington. How would you evaluate the way the governor has handled the coronavirus situation?
I think he's done an excellent job. We flattened the curve. The only thing that I would suggest is that, you know, and he did this a bit, is areas that are not as hard hit, maybe loosening up some of the restrictions a little faster. But I understand why he might not want to do that, because then you might see a spike. So, but overall, I think his handling of it has been very good. It could have been devastating, and it was devastating in places like Western Washington, but it could have been much worse. So I'm very, very happy with how he handled it.
I mean, would you complain that the governor has essentially tanked the economy in the state of Washington, as some are agreeing, or some are saying?
I think if he didn't do what he did, and he didn't take the precautions that he did, then it would have been much worse. He had to take those precautions. Otherwise, the economy could have been much more impacted by hundreds of thousands of people dying. And so I'm very, very glad, especially considering my family. My parents are both seniors, and I want them to be safe. And I'm so happy that he mandated wearing masks to keep people like my parents safe.
How would you evaluate the governor's performance and his administration's performance with the unemployment issues in terms of fraud and the state losing essentially hundreds of millions of dollars in unemployment insurance money because of a scam that kind of ran through the state government?
Yeah, that was really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate that people will take advantage of a system like that. And I think that they caught it pretty quickly. And they were able to remedy it pretty quickly, which is good.
So the coronavirus has brought more attention to the role of public health in the state of Washington, and public health officials have long warned they don't have a stable funding source. Would you support the state providing more money, a tax or something to make sure the health districts around the state have more money to carry out their roles?
Yes, definitely. And like I said before, we do have people in Western Washington, billionaires in Western Washington, who are currently paying no income tax. And I feel like with just a small wealth tax, we could definitely fund not only making sure that the public health sector stays relevant and buoyant, but we could also expand health care coverage to everyone.
So is the wealth tax, is that the singular tax that you would talk about increasing? Do you also support a state income tax? Would you then cut the state's sales tax? Look at the overall taxation picture.
Yeah, so I would prefer if we could also cut sales and property tax, because they're very regressive taxes, and increase and capital gains, and maybe create an income tax, except that the problem is right now in our Constitution, it says taxes must be flat, basically. So we can't do progressive taxation. So we need to make sure that we change that in our Constitution, because we can't have flat taxes. That hurts the working class more. So we need to make sure that we change that in our constitution.
So we had wildfires over the last few weeks, and I'm sure you were socked in with smoke as everybody else was. Lands Commissioner Hillary Franz has proposed a surcharge on certain insurance premiums. Is that something that you would support to create a kind of a dedicated wildfire fund?
Definitely, definitely. And also, I will say that I had a little bit of a debate on Twitter about this because I hardly could leave my house. My daughter and I could hardly leave our house for about a week because the smoke was so bad in our area. And despite the fact that some arson and gender reveal parties may start fires, it's really dry conditions and hotter summers that make fires spread so much more easily. So when elected, I will take the environmental impacts of climate change seriously and work to pass clean energy bills.
So do you support the cutting of more trees on state lands in order to be able to reduce the wildfire load out there? Or go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that having maintenance in our forests is important, but I don't think that that's the main issue. I think that we do need to take climate change more seriously. So yes, I would definitely support Hillary Franz's bill, and I would kind of look to her because she's the expert about what we should do to be better prepared. But like I said, we definitely need to take climate change seriously.
So let's go down that road just a little ways. What other actions can the state take in order to combat climate change?
Well, like I said, we need to work to pass clean energy bills. Ensure that we are investing in more clean energy.
So go a little deeper into that. When you talk about that, what do you mean about encouraging clean energy?
Yeah, like solar and wind. We need to transition away from dirty energy like coal. I'm definitely not for fracking and that sort of thing. And I would definitely support a carbon tax. I know we had a carbon tax bill and it didn't pass. So we need to look into that and ensure that we leave a clean planet for our future generations, like my daughter.
So does that mean more tax incentives for solar and geothermal and wind? Does that mean easier permitting?
Definitely. All of the above.
So Washington's doing a pretty good job. I mean, all you have to do is walk, you know, drive across Snoqualmie Pass to see, you know, wind generation. You drive down to the Palouse. There's a wind farm down there. There are solar farms in Washington. What more needs to be done? I mean, is there a lot more potential in Washington, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think we should definitely, like you said, give tax incentives to people who want to set up solar on their property or businesses that want to convert to solar. I think that's something we can do. So, and that would be a very good start. But like I said, we did have a carbon tax bill that didn't pass. And that's another thing that we can do is to make sure that we have bills like that that go through the legislature and get implemented.
So up in your area, or at least up in the 7th District, wolves are a big issue in the interactions between wolves and livestock. What's your opinion about how the state has handled those wolf-livestock interactions?
Yeah, I think that wolves should be reintroduced, but we need to be very, very careful about where we do reintroduce them to make sure that they aren't crossing over into ranchers' land, just because it creates such an issue, a political issue. So I think that we need to be very, very cautious about where we reintroduce wolves.
Do you support the state shooting wolves that get in and prey on livestock?
I would rather them capture them and transport them someplace else where they would be safer and away from livestock. That would be my preference.
Is that realistic? I mean, a lot of wolves, right, will attack in the middle of the night when it's dark. Are you going to put people out there to watch the wolves before they get out and get into a farmer's pasture?
Well, so if they're finding them to shoot them, then they can find them to tranquilize them and transport them someplace different, that they won't have the potential of running into livestock. Like I said, we need to be very careful about where we're reintroducing them, that it's not near a rancher's land.
So how, I mean, you've got a real difficult race. How do you make sure that the people up in those rural counties know what you stand for and that you're actually on their side?
Yeah, so I've been, I'm going to start running radio ads. I've already recorded them with a country station, and I've been doing print ads in local papers. And like I said, my volunteers, I have about 15 volunteers who are sending out postcards, writing handwritten postcards to voters. It is difficult in this time. I can't go door knocking, and I wish I could. But I'm doing everything I can to let people know that that I'm here, and I would love to hear from people in this area with any questions they have. They can go to my website. It's davenportforwashington.com. And feel free to email me with any concerns. That's essentially, virtually is almost the only way I can get in touch with people, but we're doing our best. There is a candidate forum also coming up on October 20th that I'll be participating in. And anytime I get an opportunity to talk to voters in this district, I really, really appreciate it.